Good evening, class. We are going to talk about chapter 14. This is actually the last chapter that talks about media. So after chapter 14, we're actually going to talk a little bit about some art history. So let's go ahead and jump right into this. When it comes to architecture, we are talking about the art and science of designing and constructing buildings, not only for practical purposes. There's a lot of symbolic and aesthetic quality when it comes to creating architecture. When it comes to architecture, it seeks to enhance our daily lives. So every time you step into a building, every time you step into a house, you can probably say there was a lot of time put into designing it and creating a space that will pretty much emphasize whatever the function of the building might be. And so if we take a look at this early example of architecture, one of the earliest ever discovered, this here is called Dolmen, found in southwest England, one of the oldest surviving structures, 4000 before Christ era, monolithic period. What people are saying about the dolmen is it was most likely served in housing the dead. So some interesting insight here is that even during this time, during the monolithic period, people were already practicing these funerary rituals. When it comes to architecture, these are the three main issues when it comes to the integration of creating a building. One is the function, how a building is used. Second is form, how it looks. Third is structure, how it stands up. So when it comes to the structure, for a big part, it's a physics problem. It's designed to accommodate compression or the pushing. It's there to accommodate the tension or the stretching and also the bending or the curving. When it comes to creating architecture, it's actually a combination of physical forces. If you can imagine putting together objects with very, very heavy materials, it takes a lot of experimenting. So we are going to look at some of these early examples, some of these early things that we often look for when it comes to architecture. For the most part, they have these three essential components. One is a supporting skeleton. The other is an outer skin. The accessories or the extra functions could be something like plumbing, electrical, wiring, something that wasn't exactly included in earlier years. When it came to early buildings, we're going to talk a little bit about some more traditional materials and methods. In the beginning, housing evolution started from caves, and this was during the hunter-gatherer times. So during that time, they were basically looking for a hole within a mountain and dwelling there. And a little bit later, they started to create huts and tents. You can probably guess that humans at the time were looking for materials already. They were being conscious of what's around them and trying to survive by using the environment. Regional styles developed from available materials. So a lot of the styles really is based on whatever is around them. So if you happen to be in an area where there's a lot of forest, then you can probably guess a lot of the dwellings were made out of wood. If you were living in the desert, you could probably guess a lot of the materials were made from sand and so on. And so back then, there wasn't modern transportation or technology to spread styles. So these styles that developed during these particular regions were there for a long time. And we're going to talk a little bit more about different materials. Wood, stone, and brick. Each has its own strength and its own weakness. For example, light wood is used for the roof beams. So think of your roof. You wouldn't want something really heavy above you, so you want something light, something that's going to protect you from the environment. When it comes to the beams themselves, heavy stone is very good because it can bear a lot of weight. It can lift up many heavy things. Most of the world's major architecture composed of stone because of its permanence, availability, and beauty. And this is an example of dry masonry. Basically, it is piling stones on top of one another. So if you are building something, maybe you used blocks in the past, if you're building them up and creating something taller and taller, that's what masonry is. Whenever the material isn't exactly the right size or the right shape, they have to cut them down a little bit, they have to chip them, and that's when they call it dressed. That's when a stone is dressed, they are cut to shape the particular structure they're trying to build. And here is an early example of a structure created. It is called the Great Zimbabwe. Okay, maybe you're familiar with the African country. The name Great Zimbabwe actually translates into stone wall. Something that might be on the quiz or the exam. And when it came to the Great Zimbabwe, the original function is still unknown. If you can see the dimensions, it is 30 feet high. So it feels really high for someone to actually live there. So maybe it was used as a well of some sort or as storage. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about different structures. One is a post and beam, and these are different arrangements and different structures that I'm hoping you guys can remember for the quiz. Post and beam is probably the most basic type of structure. It's often called post and lintel, but for the sake of this class, we just call it post and beam. So what this basically is a vertical post bearing the weight of a horizontal beam and carry it to the ground. And let me show you an example here. Okay, so on the diagram on the left, you can see the structure. Basically, it looks like three large stones, two vertical stones and one horizontal. Okay, the form determined by strengths and weaknesses of the material used. Stone beams, which are shorter than wooden beams, and there's this strength to weight ratio that they have to think about. In other words, if a roof is wide, then you can probably guess that you can't use very narrow beams. You probably need very thick beams. Okay, if you have a row of columns, it is called a colonnade. So imagine posts and beams right next to each other, and that they are ongoing. We call that a colonnade. And let me show you an example of that here. So we're looking at colonnades in different patterns, especially in the upper section. You can see where the vertical beams are pushing up these horizontal beams, and that it's ongoing. Something that you'll notice with architecture, and something that we talked about in a previous chapter, is this consistency of an ongoing symmetry that's always used in architecture. For some reason, we as humans, we love to see symmetry in architecture, partly because we look at ourselves in a similar manner. We like to have symmetry with the human form. So when it comes to our living space, we like to feel that as well. And so this is the colonnade in the court of Amenhotep III. And so this was made during the ancient Egyptian time. It was later refined by the Greeks, and examples of that would be seen in the Parthenon in our other architecture. So the Parthenon is another architecture that I'm hoping you guys can be familiar with. So other traditional materials and methods would include these types here, these other types of structures, a round arch, a vault, and a dome. So I'm hoping that you're familiar with what an arch basically is. A vault is bricks or blocks in a unified ceiling shell. So if there is a collection of masonry and that it somehow goes over our heads, that's what a vault is. If you can imagine a bank, and that they keep all the most of the cash in the main vault, it's very protected, right? And in more recent times, they use reinforced concrete as a type of vault. Okay, so when it comes to these arches, they often are put together in this manner here. If you look at the diagram, they are stacked up upon each other. And back then, there was no, say, liquid adhesive. There is no concrete that was cemented and allowed for it to stay there. So they actually depended on just the weight of the materials. And that was actually strong enough to create the structure. And so they would actually shape the masonry to an arch. And in the very top, they would actually use what is called a keystone. The keystone is actually necessary in order for it to lift itself up on its own. So if you were to pile these bricks up on each other like this manner, this upside down U, it wouldn't really stand on its own, except that keystone in the very center is crucial in keeping it all together. When you have a series of arches, it creates a type of barrel vault. Imagine a tunnel or the entrance to an igloo. Remember that the barrel vault, basically, when many arches are connected, making an extension of an arch. So again, these are types of architectures that you guys will be quizzed on or tested on the exam. So here is another kind of vault. It's actually a groin vault. It's a type of Roman construction. It's one of the first to use vaults above the ground. When there is an intersection of two barrel vaults, it's called a groin arch. So, for the sake of the class or the quiz, I would probably remember what a vault is, and I would remember what a groin vault is. I would remember what an arch is, and also this here, an arcade. An arcade is when there is a series of arches. So, arches right alongside each other. One of the most famous examples of an arcade is this here, the Pont du Gard. There's actually a video. I'm hoping that you guys will check it out in the module. Very large structure, 902 feet in length, 161 feet tall. If you watch the video, you can see how large it is in a scale to people. It's humongous. And so something about this, it was made during the 15 Christ era, so over 2,000 years ago. And something about this current architecture, it's actually still up. But it's not, it's leaning towards one direction. That's what people are saying. So it's slowly becoming not exactly safe for people to use, but it's still a huge tourist attraction. Okay, so the Pont du Gard is one of the first structures to actually use concrete. So I talked a little bit about that earlier, but it's basically a liquid that is very useful because it is very inexpensive, it is stone-like, it is versatile, and it is strong. So what liquid concrete is used for, basically cementing materials together, and when it hardens, it's basically like a rock, so it can stand the test of time, and it's very durable. Okay, here's another type of structure that I hope you can remember, a dome. Okay, maybe you've been to Half Dome in the Yosemite, or maybe you've been to a, say, maybe the Silent Arena or any type of spectator sport. You've probably seen what these domes are from the inside. So what you're looking at, basically a hemispherical vault built from a circular or polygonal base. The weight pushes downward and outward along a circumference. So the bearing of the weight is balanced by the curvature, in that the circular, this hemispherical shape allows for it to stay intact. Sometimes you'll see domes often on a cylinder. You've probably seen this in many things like a mosque or a church. Okay, speaking of that, here is one of the most famous churches. Maybe some of you have seen or heard of this architecture before, the Hagia Sophia, one of the most important religious buildings in the world. And the Hagia Sophia is actually in current day Istanbul, Turkey. It was made in 532. Something about this, it was actually built during the Byzantine era. It was actually early Christian architecture, and you can tell from the Gothic architecture, which is something we're going to discuss a little bit later. But as time passed, it was eventually ruled by Islamic leaders, and so they converted the church into a Islamic mosque, and that's why you see the very circular domes. They call them minarets. These are Islamic towers. In these minaret areas, many of the devout, many Muslim men would climb up to the top, and they would go there to pray, and they would basically go there to meditate. Okay. And so here's an example of a dome on pendentives. Pendentives are these triangular shapes underneath a dome. You could say it's a little bit of an aesthetic, and it's more of an aesthetic quality over function. It's very interesting in that it's still strong enough to uphold the weight on the top. And so because of that, it appears to float due to the row of windows encircling the base. So we're actually going to see what this looks like on an actual building, these pendentives. And so if we were to go inside the Hagia Sophia, this is what it looks like. A lot of very intricate designs, intricate calligraphy. And so if you look at the inner dome, the ceiling, right underneath that, you'll see the pendentives, these triangular support structures, and that what many architects do is they use that as a space to add design. So architects can make some really beautiful works of art on these areas. Almost every foot of this architecture has some design on it. And now, speaking of church architecture, this is another type. It's not exactly an Islamic architecture. This is actually an example of Gothic architecture. Whenever I say Gothic, I'm referring to an early Christian style. And so this is actually the inside of the Notre Dame de Chartres, made in 1145 to 1513. And so many of these Gothic buildings have pointed arches and vaults. And so, have you ever wondered why in churches many of the ceilings are very high and they're very pointed? You can say that the church is creating a space that allows for the people to enter the space to feel a little bit closer to heaven. And so they purposely create the ceilings higher. They exaggerate that space. So a little bit more info with the a little more info on the Gothic style. They have these what they call buttresses. Buttresses are structures that create these right angles to the outer walls to bear the thrust. And so the reason why they have buttresses on Gothic architecture is that the arch usually is so tall, so heavy that they need a little bit more structure to keep it up. And so they have these buttresses that are added in right angles. And there's also flying buttresses. These are actually structures that are outside of the actual arch. And I'll show you guys an example of that in just a little bit. So in the Gothic style, you'll see buttresses and you'll also see flying buttresses. When you see these flying buttresses, it looks like it's creating a type of skeleton shape around churches. And it allows for more height and also a little bit more light to enter from different directions. And this adds on to this godly presence. Usually, the highest part of the interior inside a church is above the main altar. So, if you've ever been in a Christian church, go to the altar and maybe that is where the highest point of the whole building is. And so this is an example of what a Gothic arch looks like. So basically an arch, but it's pointier. And the diagram of the flying buttresses. So we have the Gothic arch, the exaggerated pointed rooftops, and if you look at the center area, that's what the regular buttress looks like. And then the flying buttresses are more outside of the building itself. So it feels like a type of skeleton that is being created around the actual building, but then it creates a little bit more shadows and also al allows lights to enter at different diagonals. So it really creates a more of a an ideal place for prayer or meditation. And so a little bit more about structure. This isn't really Gothic style anymore. When it comes to the inner structure, especially in things like the roof of a home, this is what is called a truss. So if you've ever been into, say, maybe you've been into your home, if you've seen what it looks like under, right above the ceiling, you'll see these wood and that they are put together in different diagonals. Sometimes they're just vertical, basically some inner support to keep that roof up. And usually it's created in a triangular formation. There's another type of architecture that is a little bit more recent. It's called a balloon frame. And so these are done with less material, thinner studs. So if you probably notice this in your house, if you're trying to, say you're trying to put up a picture, maybe you're trying to mount a frame, you'll notice you can't just put it on any part of the wall, you need to put it on the stud. So that's what it looks, this is what it would look like without the walls. You need to try to find the stud so that it doesn't just tear through the wall. So the balloon frame, it was very useful because this whoever designed it allowed it helped allow for builders to create very quickly. They were able to accommodate the growing working class, and so you'll see a lot of houses using the same type of truss. So it was a little bit later when they started to use cast iron. During this time here in the 19th century, what cast iron did was it allowed for lighter exterior walls and more flexible interior spaces. And here's an example of an architecture that is using cast iron, the Crystal Palace. You're probably looking at this picture and thinking, yeah, it's a pretty good drawing, it's a pretty good painting, but why is it a painting and not actually the photograph of the architecture? Well, the actual architecture burned down because of the materials that it was built with. It was very flammable. So when there was an accident and it burned down very quickly. So this again is the Crystal Palace. The architect is Joseph Paxton. It was actually built for a type of international exposition. It had around 19 acres of parkland. It freed from past styles of construction. So you can say that it was a very innovative design. I'm going to go ahead and pause here. This is the end of part one of architecture.